Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 242. And I am really excited to have on this week a longtime Twitter follower, new head boys basketball coach at Heartland Lutheran High School here in Nebraska, Stephen Spees. I got that right, didn't I, Coach?
You did.
All right. Steve Spees, the head boys basketball coach at Heartland Lutheran. But before we bring Coach in, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Check out their practice at CosacChiro.com, K-O-S-A-K-C-H-I-R-O.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you like this, download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, whether it's on iTunes or Spotify or whatever. Just give us 5 stars and say nice things about A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, because when you do that, people look up Coaching Basketball Podcast. It shoots us closer to the top of the list, and that's just good for everybody. So please do that if you would be so willing. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Go check out penandanapkin.com. You're going to hear a bunch of advertisements about Metro Basketball Coaches Association, Kings of Their Court, University, all those other things. Anything that you can do to support A Pen and a Napkin, that would be awesome. But before we even start thinking about that any further, we are going to bring in Coach Spees. Coach, how are we doing tonight?
Really well, Marty. I appreciate you having me on and just doing a super evening. Couldn't ask for more beautiful weather this weekend for a couple pre-fall days. So I'm really excited about fall's my favorite season of the year. So really excited about that. So.
Well, I'm guessing for you, Steve, it could be 162 below Celsius right now, but you're probably still flying high off of last night's Husker win.
Yes, I will agree with that as well. Mm-hmm. They just looked fantastic, especially the first half. That gets a person excited as well, especially a lifelong Husker fan. And I know they'll fix up some things there in the second half, from the second half of last night. But to dominate a Colorado Buffalo team like they did was really exciting.
Yeah, they played well that first half, especially. My beloved Iowa Hawkeyes did not, and I don't look at that as viciously as some people. I don't hate Iowa State because I didn't go to Iowa or didn't go to Iowa State, that type of a thing. But if you're a Hawkeye fan waking up this morning, you're not feeling great either, especially with the way that game came down. And they should have won, but it is what it is. You move on. So
right. I thought they were on their way to a better start than that after I saw their score last week and looked like, oh, wow, they're finally going to put up some points. But yeah. not to be yesterday.
Oh, no. Nope. So but I digress. This is a basketball coaching podcast. Anybody listening across the nation and around the world, that's enough Midwestern Big Ten football talk for now. So let's dive into you, Steve. Let's talk about you, new head boys basketball coach at Heartland Lutheran. But we're going to get to plenty of that discussion. For folks that don't know a lot about you, don't know a lot about your basketball journey, kind of fill us in and how did you end up in this position? How's your basketball journey progressed here?
Okay, yeah. This is year 27. I started out at Neely Oakdale Public Schools as the freshman boys and assistant boys JV boys and assistant varsity coach up there, 98 to 2000. Learned a ton about myself and, nobody's ever necessarily a very good teacher their first year or two in the profession, you really aren't until you progress. And I can say the same thing about coaching as well. Yeah. I look back at some of the ways I tried to instruct and tried to coach and my mannerisms and my sideline demeanor and so forth and just cringe.
Yeah.
I can't believe that was me at one point. But nonetheless, what helped me turn the corner was in 2000, after we got married, we went to North Platte, and I didn't have a position then because at the time, my wife at the time, we went to there for her job, and I got in with St. Patrick's. So from 2002, we went to, I was with North Platte St. Patrick's Boys program in the same capacity, freshman, and then co-JV out there, and then assistant varsity boys. And that just really helps me to kind of learn what to do better. I learned a lot of things to do and a lot of things not to do just at Neely. And then when I got to St. Pat's, that just really helped me turn the corner and say, see, okay, this really is how it can be done or should be done, that sort of thing. And then I got an incredible opportunity. I was teaching the second year, so the 01, 02 school year, I did get in with the North Platte Public Schools as a teacher. And our games would be at Adams Middle School, so where I was a teacher. So they would actually use my classroom for a halftime, even though I coached at St. Patrick's when we went over there. So I was coaching for the opponent when I used my own classroom, but for halftime,
A
which
little
is,
plot twist there, yeah.
there's some irony, isn't it? But Mark Woodhead, who dad of Danny Woodhead,
You bet.
happened to be in the audience, and Danny didn't play on a freshman team all the time because he was starting on the varsity. So at any for North Platte High, so. I didn't actually coach that first game against him, but there was plenty of other talent on that team. But we had a pretty talented squad ourselves, and the things that we ran at St. Pat's just worked really well that night. We wound up winning, and news travels fast. So at the end of that season, the 0-2 season, in which we went to the state semis with St. Patrick's, we lost at Pershing to Sutton. By I think three, it was a real close 3 or 6. It was a real close game, and one of those coulda, shoulda, a couple plays go here or there. Anyway, Coach Woodhead got a hold of me after that season, said that he had been rewarded with becoming the head girls varsity coach at North Platte High, and would I entertain the thought of being his assistant? And waited out, did the whole pros and cons list on a legal pad. I mean, that's a true story. And decided, yeah, what an incredible way to advance. I was already teaching in the district. It just helped me. It was just going to be a good situation in a lot of for a lot of reason. And so then that began an 11-year journey. Where I was the JV girls and assistant varsity girls coach for Class A North Platte High. So I'd been C2, C2, and then here I was Class A, changed genders, which there again was a great move. People said, I don't know, how are you going to be able to coach girls? And I didn't know either at first. But after those 11 years, I almost didn't want to coach anybody else but girls. That they're just a different. They listen. Girls don't always necessarily think they know a lot. More than than the coach. Like some. I'm not trying to throw all the boys under the bus, but you get that sometimes where you coach girls yourself and kind of get that idea. So at any rate. Went 140 and 60 as the JV girls coach at North Platte High. Never had a losing record in those 11 years. Incredibly blessed with some talented groups that came through, and so forth. Great learning experience. Went to state a few times with the varsity, or 2 times with the varsity over that span. And at any rate, took a turn back with the boys in middle school for the last three years that I was out there. That I was the first 8th grade boys interscholastic coach that North Platte Public Schools had had. Up until that point, they were intramural. And so I really felt like a pioneer at that point. Matt Kaminsky was the head boys basketball coach of the varsity squad. in those years. And he and I worked really well together. I felt like I learned a ton from him. His playbook was open to me. Anything I needed, practice plans and ideas and bounce stuff off of and camps. And
Yep.
I even road tripped with him to a district game once and, you know, that sort of thing. And I felt pretty privileged. So that was great. And then we moved to back here to Grand Island, got closer to my home stomping grounds of Wood River
Yep.
and Northwest. I served under Chip Baugh on the boys staff one season, then under Rico Burkett on the with the girls staff one season, and then with Russ Murr for another five after that. Well, another three, and then no, excuse me, another four, and then one under Derek Lindsay, who's still there, who's still the head girls coach there. But and you know, over those years, I was, you know, between the boys and the girls coaches or teams, I was co-freshman, you know, reserve, JV, a time or two, varsity assistant all those years. So just kind of a just wasn't as defined maybe as I my role wasn't as defined as you know it had been in previous programs, but that's all right. We still accomplished quite a bit. Won the state championship in 19 with the girls program with Coach Murr and a super talent Whitney Brown. You might recognize that name. Lauren Hauser, just a talented squad. Megan Cooper, Whitney Jensen, a couple of the more unsung heroes of those squads. And then, yeah, now I took a year off actually, because I thought that might be good for me to do with some things that have transpired. And now, yeah, I'm the head boys coach at Heartland Lutheran. I've got a summer under my belt with those guys. I love them. We had a tremendous summer. June, you know, as you know, June is kind of the summer season as far as basketball goes. I tell you what, though, Marty, aside from the X's and O's, aside from just playing games, the greatest thing that happened to start our summer off, we played over at Kearney Catholic in a team camp, got done, had a pretty productive morning, had a good morning, saw some great things, some flashes of potential and such. Went over to Cane's to eat lunch. And without me even saying anything, the boys just automatically they after they were done ordering, they put together tables. And instead of you know being divided amongst you know two or three tables, we had one big long table, and we ate chicken strips and laughed and had jokes and told stories. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, awesome.
So,
Awesome.
yeah.
So, you know, so you 27 years, you know, 27 years you were an assistant coach. You took a year off, and then you decided to jump in on this, you know, after 27 years of not sitting in the captain's chair, so to speak, you decided to make this leap here. What was kind of the driving force behind that, Steve?
Yeah, so those years weren't without rejection. I'm not gonna beat around the bush about that. In fact, I you know I thought I had an op I interviewed and had opportunities well twice for sure at Northwest, and it just wasn't to be. The last one I think kind of hurt, just purely for you know I've been there a while, you know, so you get to feeling like you have some seniority yet. And you build a little bit of a resume over all those course of years, and maybe in the end it's decided that it's not as good as somebody else's. So you know more power to them, and you move on. And I just like I said, I felt like probably take it, you know, no pun intended, take a time out and you know just kind of regroup. In the meantime, Brent Penny, who is the athletic director over at Heartland Lutheran, he, you know, always kind of would like to bend my ear about, you know, this or that. We talk sports and talk shop about basketball, and they were going to make some, lo and behold, he wanted to know if I would come over as an assistant, and it was kind of during that break year for me. And
Sure.
I entertained the thought of trying to watch some film and some things for him. And I did go to some, I went to several games just because I'm a fan and
yeah.
Wanted to watch. And then at the end of that spring, or well, it had been last spring, we talked one night, and some changes were going to be made to coaching personnel over there. And would I entertain the thought of being their head coach mm-hmm. For the boys squad, which he had been,
yeah.
And there were some other changes I won't get into, but he's actually now going to be the girls coach. And it took me 24 hours, and I said yes to that opportunity, and that's how that came about.
Yeah. What's been kind of the big adjustments? What, you know, you like I said, 27 years in one particular role, although it shifted. I mean, junior high, varsity assistant, JV coach, they're all assistant coaching positions, but there's different responsibilities with every one. And there's, you know, you have to have a little bit of a different mindset, not a majorly different mindset, but there is a different mindset between coaching eighth graders and coaching JV head coach, and, you know, all that stuff in between. For you, what have been maybe some things that you felt like you've been prepared for, and maybe some things that maybe have, you know, you had to adjust a little bit more to it, or you didn't anticipate this or that, or whatever it may be?
Yeah. There's so many ways I could go with that.
We got time to go ways, you know, so okay, do what you want to do, my man.
Super. Thank you. So I think first and foremost, it was the ability of understanding how to build relationships with players was the number one key factor. I didn't understand how to do that from 98 to 2000. You know, I wish I did. That would have been that much better of an experience for everybody associated there. But I just thought it was all about, you know, basketball. I thought it was just all about putting the ball on the hoop and X's and O's. And if they didn't do it, then, you know, better raise your voice and get them to do it and that sort of thing. And I quickly realized, gee, you know, that's obviously that didn't get me anywhere. I had a dismal record as a JV coach up there. And, you know, some of it has to do with, you know, we were at pretty stellar competition up in that northeast part of the state. But nonetheless, we could have helped ourselves more. I could have helped ourselves more in that regard. Because going from C2 to C2, you know, Neely to St. Pat's,
yeah,
I didn't think that. I, you know, some people might say, well, that's a lateral move, but not necessarily, because you grow as a person, and then B, you know, you get your eyes get open to other people who do other things, other strategies. You have different things that you can do with different personnel. And so what I learned there was just, hey, you know, you don't have to get stuck on it doesn't have to be just man to man or 2-3 zone. It can be, we ran a 1-3-1 mm-hmm. at St. Patrick's because we could, we had long, lanky guys that we could spread the floor with, and we could do some traps out of it and so, you know, so forth. And, I thought that going from class C2 then to class A, I thought, oh, you know, this is, you know, buckle your seatbelts. And in a sense it was, but in the end it was again about getting to know the girls and getting them to be able to trust what we were doing and getting them to be able to buy in, because Mark and I came in both together.
Yeah.
And I think that was what helped. And we had to become strong. So there was another learning point, was I not only had to build a good solid foundation with the girls, I had to do that with my head coach as well. And, and not to say that the previous head coaches I worked with, not just that we didn't get along, and so forth, but he and I had probably as strong of a bond as anybody I'd coached with up to that point as well. And so that helped getting the girls to trust and buy in. And then getting used to games and competition at that level. You know, we at the time, Lincoln still only had four Class A schools. And there was a difference. You know, Lincoln High was good, and then they kind of hit a valley, we'll say it that way. Lincoln Northeast, those were some pretty great years for them. Just you know, I can look back on my experience and say I coached against Dominique Kelly and you know, KK Hauser for Lincoln Southeast, and you know, you,
Kostanek, yeah.
yes,
Yeah.
yes, yep. And yeah, so talk about that. When she came, you know, there was some eligibility, you know, couldn't play
Questions.
varsity.
Yeah.
Yeah, questions, couldn't play varsity right away. So was I gonna have to was I gonna have to weather her storm in a JV game and that sort of thing? And I don't I thought played out pretty well, I think. But at any rate, just all those quirky little things you run into sometimes. But at any rate, you know, what do I have to be ready for? You know, you get to know your opponents and you get to know their styles. You know, Coach Larson and Coach Smith at Southeast, for example. Coach Smith was a JV coach, and you get to know, you know, you get to know the chess matches that you're going to have to be in with those guys.
Yeah.
I, in fact, and I've never been one to, I'm a people person. I've never felt ill will towards, you know, my opposing coaches or anything like that. In fact, I relish the chance to have those pregame conversations
Sure.
with other coaches and get to pick their brain. And there was a JV coach from Lincoln Northeast at the time. It was my first or second season. It was early on, and he was asking me what you know, how is the season going? And I think we were 10-8 at that point, or we were 2 games over .500. And I knew that they were probably more than that. You know, you feel a little humbled, you know, trying to, you know, visit in with who I thought was I respected them. And he was really gracious, and he said, "Hey, that's all right. You're doing what you can do, and that's a great record." And he was just really uplifting and gave me a lot of confidence. And we gave them all we could handle that night too, for as that goes. And
Yeah.
You know, so those are things where you get to learn the coach's styles, but you also get some wisdom from them and that sort of thing. So that's been good.
In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were nine Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least two seasons. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. One year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of their court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of their court. How do you feel like those positions have prepared you? You know, being a freshman coach, being a JV coach, working with, you know, you're if you're the freshman coach, you are obviously working with freshman level players, and you're not ready for, you know, you're, if you know, the first rule of a JV or freshman coach is if anybody's any good, they're probably getting moved up, and I'm not going to have them for long, you know. So you have to be a little bit more, you know. How do you think for coaching those programs at different times, how do you think that has helped, though, prepare you for this new challenge?
Yeah, that's a great question. I remember the days at Neely Oakdale. Your small town high school gyms, the seating is typically one side and then maybe a stage on the other. And then that's where the scores table is. And that's where your team benches are and such. And our locker rooms were underneath that stage area. So I recall the times when we would play, like, for example, it was still Elgin and Elgin Pope John. They were separate, for example. And then there were some other schools too where we would play three games in a row, so yeah, three bangers, if you will. So we play a freshman game and a JV game and then the varsity game. And so, like, in a day or two before, at least, I was doing the whole puzzle of quarters. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you could only have, you know, six quarters a night. Well, I had to figure, okay, who was going to have only freshman quarters? Who was going to have freshman and JV quarters? Who was going to have varsity quarters? You know, I think maybe somebody didn't play freshman so they could have enough JV and varsity quarters and so forth. So, you know, you learn really fast who those guys or girls are going to be. And, you know, you just deal.
Yeah.
That was another thing where I really felt I had a lot of latitude at North Platte High. We scrimmaged a lot to end practices. That kind of got to be our customary thing, and that was fun. Coach Woodhead would have, you know, his starters plus maybe a couple, and then I would have everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, let's make sure that we give those varsity girls a look every single time.
Yep.
Everything.
Yep. That
was my role. And that was a ton of fun because it was like playing, it was almost like coaching a game, the majority of nights in practice, just because, oh, let's see what this combination can do. Let's see what that combination can do. And then even sometimes, then we would stay after and I'd say, okay, let's run through this and this and this play, just so to, and with a certain other girl or two with us, because maybe they didn't get to play on our side in practice, but I wanted them to be on the same page with us when we got to game night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was, you know, it was allowed to do, you know, as long as we didn't go forever after, you know, let's take 5 minutes and run through these real sharp and then we'll be done.
Yep.
You know, and then we'll all be out. And that's did that a number of times. And so, yeah, you get to know a lot of those things prepared me for this head position now, because I can take tidbits from all those experiences and I can say, okay, I remember when this strategy worked or that strategy worked, or, you know, I remember when we would practice, you know, this particular, you know, this style, we'd have this style of practice or that drill in practice. And, you know, we're gonna see how all those experiences can be knitted together into the right quilt for us. But I'm really looking forward to it.
Yep. You're at Heartland Lutheran and you've talked a little bit about that. But you're still teaching at Northwest. What's that experience been like for you to try and, you know, create that bond with players who are at another school, but you're teaching at one place. You're not in the building with them on a daily basis. So what are some ways you're trying to create that connection with your players?
Yeah. So first of all, I got to give a lot of gratitude towards the folks at Northwest administration for helping me with that. Just, it's been done before that we had a classroom math teacher who taught at Northwest and was the head boys basketball coach a number of years ago over at Heartland Lutheran. And so there was a bit of a precedent. And so thankfully, PJ Smith, who's our building principal, he was an associate principal at the time. And he remembered that and remember how that worked and so forth. So that was a positive in my favor and helped me, because I didn't, that was one of the things I didn't officially accept that until I knew I was going to have support in that regard. So,
sure.
That was,
yeah.
So anyway, what am I doing with the boys? So June, that's why June was all that much more important. And, you know, getting connected with the guys and building relationships, not only for the team camps, but we had our own skill. I hosted, and the guys,
yep,
and I, we hosted our own skills camp for middle and elementary schoolers at Heartland in June for 3 days. And then they, I'm going to reconfigure the time a little bit, timeline, which is neither here nor there, but there was some big breaks between age groups this year. And not that that wasn't okay, but I just want to streamline it a little bit better. But what that did allow for, and I still want to preserve to some extent next year, is they would stick around, like on a lunch break type of situations and shoot themselves.
Exactly.
They would get out. We have a gun over there, and they would get that set up and shoot the daylights out of the ball with using that, and just kind of have fun with it. And it was just fun to be around guys who wanted to do that on their own. I didn't say, hey, why don't you go in and get that out? They took it upon themselves to do that. You know, so that was really cool. And so then I went over there a few weeks ago for just right before school started for a we did a CPR and you know, AED training and stuff like that, like we do sometimes, you know. And as I was coming in for that, some of the guys were just leaving from a football conditioning workout. And they, hey, Coach Feast, you know, and yeah. there was, we had a, you know, a little break in July there where we didn't see each other much. And then for us to reconnect like that, just in that instance with, you know, like, oh, hey, you know, those are my guys, you know, yeah. And they obviously felt the same way with, by their reaction.
Yeah.
And then, whether you're A or a B or a D6, you know,
yeah,
program, they need workers too. So I've been doing some public address work.
Oh, nice.
during yeah, their football games. I get to watch them a little bit, and you know, I know the guys know that I'm there. I see them, we see each other pregame and that sort of thing. And I think they definitely appreciate the support that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm doing what I can, and it'll, you know, those things, and then we'll get more connected once, especially once football is over.
Yep.
Just with messages, and I'm going to, you know, give them, you know, calendars and schedules and just things like that, you know, that's necessary. All that preseason stuff you want to try to take care of. So.
Yep. Yep. You know, I'm a book nerd, Steve. You know, I can't, you know, I mean, God bless them, love them. I've got a bit of a problem. And one of the books that you put on your or one of the things you put on your thing for influences was Lead Like Butler. And it doesn't happen very often that somebody will put a book down as an influence. So, why that book? What about it? What do you like about it? Why is that book so influential for you? I can't say words all of a sudden, so.
Right. I too am a book nerd, and really had to, my little caveat about that is I try not to buy too far ahead of how fast I can get them read.
Sure.
So, I mean, I bought Sum It Up, Pat, the Pat Summit book. I bought that and then had my eye on a couple others. And
sure.
I had to tamper myself so I could get that read before I could go on with some more. But no, okay. So Lead Like Butler was one that I read in a fairly short amount of time. I'm not a fast reader.
Sure.
In fact, I read it two or three times, but I just love the way it laid out a plan or a program. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really rooted in solid on solid ground that way, and in some solid concepts.
Sure.
I don't have my copy in front of me, but just the way everything from how you would deal with, team absences or player absences from teams the way the ideas for how teams can serve a community and how teams can bond those sorts of things were important to me as, anything that, you put out on a napkin, for example. So That really grabbed me a lot. And then I became a Butler fan when oh goodness, Coach
Stevens.
Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
When Brad Stevens was the head coach at Butler, he caught my eye.
Sure.
And I know Thad Mata had coached there. Yep. And those teams are perennially making waves in the tournament every year and such. And I was intrigued. And so I got that book. Barry Collier,
yep,
was the athletic director after he'd been, he was there as a coach, actually, and then went to Nebraska.
Yep.
And then he went back to Butler as an AD. People always wondered, how did Nebraska get him and then he not have success? I don't know. It's hard to, as we all know, mm-hmm. that's been a big question. How can a coach not have success in a, in a given place?
Yep.
And that's probably one of the ones that I question too. But again, I think maybe certain coaches are geared to certain levels. And he obviously had success at Butler before he got to Nebraska. And I think he had mild success at Nebraska,
overwhelming success. Yeah.
Right. Right. And that doesn't take anything away from the type of guy he is, the Christian he is, and the type of coach that he is, deep down. So, the other reason why I like that book is because it wasn't just about their basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
The book was centered around what's known there as the Bulldog Way.
Yep.
And it transcends sports. It transcends men's and women's sports programs in sports. So I thought, well, how neat is that there could be a book about a Division I college that has had, success and proven success it's not just about one program. It's about, all the way across the board. So,
yep.
When I was an eighth grade coach at North Platte Middle School, that's exactly what I used to pattern my handbook.
Yep.
Off of. And I got Coach Kaminsky's blessing. I got our athletic director's stamp of approval on it, and we went with it, and the parents liked it. Communication was first and foremost in my mind to them, and it just helped set the groundwork for, okay, this is how we're going to operate. And we had success with it. So, so Coach, I want to carry that on. You know, I'm sorry. I want to carry that on now that, to quote your phrase, now that I'm in the captain's chair, you know, I'm gonna use some of those things that work, like I said, and that's definitely gonna be one of them.
Yep. Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that A Pen and a Napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Coach, at this time, let's talk a little John Wooden. We've talked a little Butler, and, you know, John Wooden's from Indiana and all that good stuff, so might as well tie it in there. So, Steve, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Sure.
All right. Here we go. From page 88 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. It is, "Mr. Vince Lombardi is supposed to have said, 'Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing.' Well, if he said that, I disagree. I believe making the total effort is everything. And that's all I ever wanted and all I ever asked from myself or my players."
Yeah.
What do you got for me, Coach?
Exactly. You know, I found that out as well. I tell you how I found that out the most, like when I say found that out, like the truth in that quote, when I started doing the stats, when I really poured myself into statistic work, watching film.
Yep.
And at first, you know, as an assistant, that comes as, okay, like literally, and back then, in yours and my careers, we've seen the literal advent of huddle.
Yep.
All the way from the ground up, you know, and even before that, then before there was huddle, there was, and iPads and such, there was those other there's BlackBerry and little held devices that you'd keep, you know, stats on and such. And that was even high tech.
Yep.
You know, and before that it was, you said you literally sat down with your notebook and you watched film and you made a spreadsheet on a piece of notebook paper.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. You
know,
oh yeah.
You know, so
I remember those archaic days well. Yeah.
yeah. Palm Pilot. That's the word I was searching for a second ago. Palm Pilots. But at any rate, so prepare, you know, being prepared. I wanted to help us be as prepared as I could. And the only way, one of the ways I knew how to do that was to get myself in gear more with that side of the coaching profession. And you know, watched a ton of film, just found out where our own players' strengths lie, and then as it progressed, then you could carry that over to, okay, now let's watch our pawn, let's do some scouting. And so I had to learn how to get better at scouting. The matchups, and okay, what can we do against, you know? And it didn't matter. You had to know what to do against Lex, you know, Randy Carpenter, for example.
Oh yeah.
You had to know what to do against his 6-footer at Lexington, just like you had to know what to do with a 6-footer at Lincoln East, for example. You know, and the two weren't the same, but you still had to figure out, okay, who can we match up, and how are our guards going to match up, and how do we keep them out of getting trapped, you know? How do we keep them out of the run and jump, you know, that sort of thing, like was popular, you know, in those days with several teams. So you just learn, you just poured yourself into work, and you dozed off and fell asleep sometimes, and you had to rewind a lot, and you know, watching, by that I mean you had to get old VHS tapes and that sort of thing, and just really learn. Now it's the same, but now it's just higher tech, you know. So now it's a lot easier. You don't have to meet somebody. You know, I remember meeting John Larson at the Kearney Country Kitchen before the state tournament, when we were going to play him first round 1 year, because you know, that was halfway, you know. So now you don't have to do that. Now you can, when your game's over, you have huddle assist, and the next by the next morning you can have your stats, and doesn't mean you still don't watch film like heck, you know, but that part of it makes it sure helps a lot.
It has simplified it, but yet made it more complicated, and in some ways more obsessive compulsive as well. So,
That's a good point too. I will say that, you know.
yeah.
And you can't. I don't think it's good to get down in the minutiae of it too deep either. I mean, you use what you can use, that'll be productive for your players. But sometimes you can go down rabbit holes with things too, and then that doesn't, I don't know if that's productive either, but that's one thing they're doing over at Heartland, is getting their huddle packages upgraded. I worked a concession or a fireworks stand this summer to try to help with that
Hey, that's good stuff there. You
fixture.
got to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So that was another thing. Speaking of what have I done with trying to make connections, that was with one of our player's mom, who's our bookkeeper over there, and you know, guys were in and out helping, and so that was fun. But it was also that you know, we could just, you know, rise a rising tide, you know, floats all boats. So
Well, hey Steve, let's jump into your philosophy and some of the stuff you want to do there at Heartland, some of the things that you've learned over the years, how you're going to now incorporate it into your own program. So let's start with baseline out of bounds plays. That's something you said you wanted to talk about. So let's jump into it. You go ahead and talk a little bit how, you know, what you want to implement, how you want to put some things together. When it's time for me to interrupt, I'll try to do so as politely as I can. But Coach Spees, tell us a little bit about what you want to do with your baseline out of bounds plays.
Sure. And that's a great segue from what we were just talking about, you know, how did I learn how to be more prepared and such. I had to learn a lot about inbounds and inbounds plays as well. You know, it's not just throw the ball in, which it might look like. I'm not saying it might not look like that sometimes,
Sure.
but I've grown to the point where, because my best sport as a high school athlete was football. To play, that was actually my best sport, and we learned real fast. There's three phases. There's offense, defense, and special teams. So translate that over to basketball. inbounds plays are my special teams. You, if you can't,
Absolutely.
if you don't understand how to do an inbounds play, it's a liability, you
Yep.
know, and you got to be as sharp on those as you do any other set play or any other defense. So, and nonetheless, what do we want to accomplish? Well, we want to try to score at a high of a rate as you can, off of those, you know, and you don't want to turn the ball over on an inbounds play. So, I mean, the idea being, there's always going to be a safety person that that my guys are going to know that they can go to if, you know, one option isn't there, if two option isn't there, you know, and so forth. So that's important. But and then you got to take what you got to take what the defense is giving you. I think over the years, I've always had a certain number of, okay, these are inbounds plays we can run against man. These are inbounds plays we can run against zone. We talked earlier about what do you have to be ready for? Well, anymore, you have to be ready for a team maybe who runs man to man in the half court to you know, look out for them to go zone on an inbounds play, you know, to defend an inbounds play. I want to really work with our guys to be able to think on their feet and recognize, you know, so we're gonna talk a lot about recognition, that sort of thing. You know, setting screens is the importance of setting good, solid screens is, you know, paramount when you're trying to run an inbounds play. That's by far what's going to get, that's going to be the difference between a layup and something that looks like we're just throwing the ball in, you know, is if we can get a screen or two executed by the right person, and get somebody, you know, to the basket or get somebody open, you know, in the corner or so, you know, so on. So, we run, you know, typically, you know, just like anybody runs, there's, you know, there's America's play and, you know, which, you know, involves, you know, you send a player off the corner and
Through
then,
the or the rescreen, you bet.
rescreen and so forth. But then we, you know, we run some action too, where we run some box sets, you know, where it's maybe screen up or screen back or a combination of those and try to get a layup out of it. I think we have the personnel to do more in, you know, run more what you might call inside plays. With some height and some size that we might have against some other teams. We'll just see how that goes. And then, but then I've got confidence that we can hit some outside shots off of certain plays too. You know, it's just going to be dependent on how well we execute and if we can take what we're given. So.
Are you running that stuff out of the same sets, the same setup? Are you running out of different formations? How do you like to get that stuff done?
Yeah, so I've got kind of in my folder of things ways that we can run several plays out of the same set. I like that a lot because then that maybe you know maybe you keep other teams on your on their toes a little bit. You know, oh, they're going to run that box play again, and then you do a little bit different action out of it, you know. Then I've got some what you might call spread plays that start out like a box, and then they're actually to get a perimeter shot. But you can run it one direction or you can run it backside, and you know that's try to mix things up a little bit that way. The other key is we talked a little bit about getting players to buy in a little bit. Is the other key is, I am never, I've never been a coach that has said, okay, you know, so I'm coaching guys now. So I'm never going to say every single play is going to be for Joe because, you know, if you do that, you're setting yourself up for, some stress and, you might even say failure in some cases because what are teams going to key? They're going to key on Joe,
You bet.
you know? And so then all of a sudden Joe gets frustrated and he can never run enough. You can never run them off enough screens to get open because, you know, A, you're only OB player is Joe, and the opponents know that, and then the other players just stand around, and then they get frustrated, so it's five players. It's a team sport. We're gonna run our inbounds and plays with that philosophy too. So if Joe has a hot hand, yeah, maybe I try him on the first play for a certain shot. But if Jimmy and Johnny, if I know that they can also hit those particular shots, then maybe the next time or two, then it's their turn. And if somebody wants to try to key on Joe, well, they got to worry about Jimmy and Johnny too. So we're going to try to make it as hard for teams to defend those situations as we can.
Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University, go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Sabota is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com. And Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. What about press breaks, Steve? Again, you're kind of coming into a new situation. Probably, I know there's still teams that pressure in the boys game, but maybe not as much as they do in the girls game. Again, depends on philosophy, depends on the coach, depends on personnel, all those different things. But how are you implementing your press break philosophy with your new team?
Sure. This has been a learning curve. Back in the day, there was a lot of four corner type press breaks. You have maybe a 2-2-1 press break situation where you bring somebody from a back corner, opposite corner, those sorts of things. John, I'm referencing Lincoln Southeast a lot because that's just big in my mind. A lot of things they used to do. They'd run a diamond set and they'd lull you to sleep. They wanted you to make the mistake, that sort of thing. When I got to Northwest, Coach Murray had a unique, but I thought it was unique, philosophy. He wanted to attack and, made sense. And so we're going to run a break that runs, to break a press, you have side, middle, and reverse. You can go up your side, you can look middle, or you can reverse the ball. And so that's using those tenets. We're going to run you call it a bow tie situation where, your primary target comes from the opposite of the ball, and then they empty out if they don't get it. And then it's just kind of that pattern where then that player in the back corner will come up the side they were on, but then the ball side player cuts through and goes away, and then the backside player comes up. So if you can envision that, each side runs a triangle, basically. The players are running in a triangle, and so eventually you have what makes up a bow tie, basically. And by the, if you don't, you're typically not going to have the first pass open, you know, like the first cutter, but you might very well get that second cutter.
Yeah,
and then you look down, and who's open down court, you know, that way. So we're gonna try to incorporate some things like that. Not always are we going to be able to do that. You know, I get that you got to have some 1-4 break and action in your back pocket ready to go too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do some things that helped us win championships in my career, and see if we can accomplish some things like that. So.
Yeah. I've always, you know, what we really taught our kids, what we really tried to emphasize was, you know, 45-degree angle cuts, diagonal cuts, diagonal cuts, diagonal cuts. It's just the hardest thing to guard, and but you can't stand. You either got to be flashing back to the ball hard, make yourself available, and then, you know, the maybe the most important thing you can tell your kids is, hey, worst case scenario, we get a 10-second call, and we're going to, you know, they get the ball, but we're going to match up, and we're going to guard them. But live ball turnovers are the worst things we can possibly do. And, you know, those are a couple of things that we really emphasized. And obviously when you have better players, that helps. You know, they're able to make the basketball plays. But when you have average talent, below average talent, those are some little things that you can do to help you in those situations, I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Yep. Like you said, the cut angle is super important. You got to hit the cutter when they're open, like right away when they're open. You can't pump fake, you know, that's, and then if you have to do that, then obviously they're not open. But then as a receiver, you also have to make sure that the inbounder knows that you're open, or the passer knows. You got to have that eye contact, and everybody's got to be talking.
Yeah.
You know, people, It's a misnomer that you only talk on defense. You got to talk on offense as much as anything. You know, call for the ball, you know, and direct traffic and so forth.
Yep. Hey, let's talk a little half court defense here. Sure. Court defense. What do you like to run? What do you like to do? What are you looking to do this year here? And obviously, it's going to be some experimentation with what you like and what your guys are capable of doing and what they're able to execute for you. But, you know, what are some things that you like to do defensively that you think are unique, Steve?
Yeah. You know, I really fell in love. And again, this is a Northwest Russ Murr as a mentor kind of a thing. We ran pack line defense.
Yep.
And before that, I'd always man-to-man, and before that I'd always been a more traditional man-to-man with a rotation, and that's not to say the teams who do that, you know, that's not to say that doesn't work for them. We just found that your kids aren't maybe they're a little faster to rotate when you do some of those things, and they aren't a step late as many times, you know, and that sort of thing. So that's what we worked on this summer. In your small school programs, typically I'm not painting a wide brush here, but typically you see more zone.
Yep.
So offensively we're gonna, you know, probably work on a lot of zone offense stuff, but we're also gonna work on some man-to-man stuff. But we're gonna run, I want to run a lot of man on defenses if we can. That's going to dictate how many, you know, I got a small squad, so that's going to dictate legs and foul trouble on a given evening and that sort of thing. But also I'm no stranger to running zones.
Yep.
You know, there's a time and place for a 2-3. There's a time and place for a matchup. I've got a couple different matchup ideas. One that we ran in Northwest, and another one that I ran before. There's, you know, it's 1-3-1. There's 3-2. You know, there's different. There's, you know, corner traps I've kind of grown to really fall in love with the defensive side of the ball. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do. Our guys, and I'm thinking that it'll follow suit. The guys that I have this summer just went hard all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have the coach going hard this summer one time. Mm-hmm. And I don't look for that to change come November. So with that said, I think we're going to be able to, you know, if we can get some deflections and the defensive rebounding is key and get that ball out of there, you know, back up the court. If we can have success doing that on the majority of nights, we'll be in good shape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go. We got two more things to talk about here, Steve.
Sure.
Let's talk about your game day. What do you like to do on game day? Your game day routines. You know, how do you try to get your teams ready to go here? I think there's an art form to it. Not everybody's going to do everything the same. But you need to have, you know, I think there's some things that are in common, but everybody has their own unique ideas. You know, so what are you thinking about your squad and what you want to do with your program?
Yeah, so, you know, as far as, you know, I've been part of a lot of teams as player, as coach, and I don't know how much we'll do, you know, like as a squad before we come and get ready. But I know I like to get to the gym in good shape so that I can go in, write the pertinent notes on the board, you know, starting lineups and just kind of recap a few things we want to accomplish on both sides of the ball, defense, offense, and whatnot. And then I like to go out and just sit. Like, mm-hmm. I like to go find my seat on the bench and just meditate is basically what it amounts to. And just kind of survey the court. And if nothing else, just be and, you know, think about kind of try to maybe visualize, or envision what could happen. But most importantly, just kind of collect my thoughts and you know, lower my heart rate a little bit and
yeah.
just enjoy being in that position, you know, and then get ready for come what may. But, that's kind of, I adopted that routine, at North Platte, and I tried to carry that over wherever I am. My daughters can attest to that. I get to the gym early, just even as an assistant.
Yeah,
you know, and well, which I was all those years anyway. But just watch, you know, and if kids were shooting around or whatever, then just watch them. But you know, just chill, and then when it's time to go give the pregame, do that, you know. It's not like, you know, it's not like football. I've been on football staffs, and then obviously as a player, and you know, you might go somewhere and have a pregame meal with the kids, and then you come and you watch a movie or you know, you have pregame meeting. It's not quite like that, you know. But in terms of some of those things, but I know that I just have some self-care things like I was just talking about that I like to do for me. You know, obviously I'm going to preach to my kids, you know, try to hydrate as much as they can during the day. And they all have their, you know, some of them probably eat more than others before a game. Maybe some of them don't like to eat before a game. I myself don't like to eat before I coach, you know, as far as that goes, too much anyway. So,
yeah. Let's talk about your team, man. Let's talk about, you know, going into the year here, you know, how you feeling about your group, what's going to be some of the things you want to emphasize here and yeah, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah. So from watching these guys, like I said, last winter, till now, and then this summer too, it's going to be finishing, you know, is going to be a big key. Finishing quarters are so huge. You know, as much as anybody, there's nothing more deflating than you have a good thing going, and then in the last minute of a quarter, you know, the other team rattles off, you know, 2, 4, 6 points, you know, or you turn it over and they get a bucket at the end. And in the grand scheme of things, it's 2 points, but it's a momentum changer, you know. And So we want to be the team that does that. You know, that's our thing. Rebounding, I got, some of my favorite drills aside from shell defense, some of my favorite drills are rebound drills where we go live and preach talking, and so forth, and getting a butt into a guy and going up strong and that sort of thing. So, and I think our guys have the capability to do all that, and that's going to be a big emphasis. I think we can run, and I think that they've demonstrated this summer that we can run. I want to definitely do some things to get them to understand to pass the ball ahead faster, and get it out and the get it out and going. You're not going to beat every team up and down the floor every possession, but I think we can do better. So those are going to be some key things right off the bat, and then and communicating, especially on defense, even when you're tired. Those are going to be some staples. People come out and see us. I want them to be able to be. I want them to be able to notice those things, because those are going to be some hallmarks that I'm going to bring to programs.
What do you kind of the one thing I want to pick out of that is the finishing the quarters. And most of our states here, we're still at the four quarters, and so we gotta, those last 60 to 120 seconds, three or four times a night, that could do a lot of different things, and it's so vital to close those out. So what are some things that you're going to try and do in practice to emphasize that and get your team ready to execute in those situations?
Yeah, so we went to I've been a number of times with a number of different programs to the Concordia women's team camps. And so have you. And so one thing that they have carried over through the years there, regardless of who their head coach has been, is that time and situation tournament. And that was one of my favorite things about that camp, regardless of how any of the rest of the day went, was if you could win any time and situation little tournament, that was you came away from that experience feeling pretty good. So translate that over to what I want to do at Heartland is, we're going to do some time and situation stuff on a regular basis in practice, and just to have the guys get the feel for, okay, we're down two with a minute left. How are we going to finish it out? Or we're up three with 30 seconds left. How are we going to finish this out? Those sorts of things. And I could, there's also so many combinations of that, those sorts of things. But and are we going to, how are we going to work on, we're not going to work on them all at once, and we're not going to work on them all every week. There's no way that you can, because there's so many different possibilities that could turn up. But I think to put the guys in those situations, a fair amount, that eventually they get a library of knowledge of, schema built up in themselves to say, oh, okay, so this is going to be similar to this, or this is going to be, we can handle this because we handled that, that sort of thing. And so I look for a lot of positives to come out of just doing some things like that, and help them build some confidence. And when you get confident, then you keep your composure. And when you keep your composure, then you can, you're more headstrong, and you can mentally strong, and you can finish those situations better.
Great stuff, Steve. Folks want to know more about you, want to know more about the Red Hornet. Awesome. I never knew that was the nickname. And like that is an awesome nickname. I love it. So if they want to know more about the Heartland Lutheran Red Hornets, how do they find out about it?
Well, I've got a Twitter account. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can look us up there. They can go to, and also the athletic department has also an account. So ours is Red. What is it? Red Hornet Boys Basketball, and then There's also Red Hornet Sports for all of our programs. And then there's a website, heartlandlutheran.org, .org, I believe it is. They can, I'm sorry, I'm fumbling.
It's all right. Orgs, comms, EDUs, you
Yep.
know.
Look for us on all those things. And yeah, that, and by all means, come out to a game this winter.
Yeah. We'll see here. We'll see what we'll see where the schedule takes us. But I would love to. That'd be cool. That'd be good. So, Steve Spies, the head boys basketball coach at Heartland Lutheran. Coach, how was your first podcasting experience?
This has been terrific. I just kind of talked about a lot of things that you asked me about, but I hope my responses made sense to folks. I hope it didn't sound like just a bunch of rambling, and this was incredible. I really appreciate it.
Well, if you've been rambling for one podcast, I've been rambling for 500 and some however many, So I don't know. The other day we started talking about B. Arthur and Rue McCallahan. So I mean, you never know what's going to happen, but that's what happened. So don't worry about it, Steve. You did a great job. It was really good. So
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
if you can hold the line here real quick, we're going to wrap up a couple things. Again, Steve Spies, the head boys basketball coach, Heartland Lutheran High School out in central Nebraska. We want to thank Cosec Chiropractic again for being our founding sponsor. None of this would be possible without Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Try to put out daily tidbits there. Download, rate, review. Again, give us 5 stars. Say good things about the pod. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. It's been a great episode number 242. It's been terrific. Coaches, I hope you've enjoyed it because I have got a nice little notes package here. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.